if we're achieving our intended goal, our intended outcome with the financial return, and we're able to bring about human flourishing, the Imago Dei, you know, that's a beautiful thing. If the goal is outsized returns and also to invest in kingdom-oriented entrepreneurs, great, let's do that. But I think what we've got to do is start to look at what was the financial goal, what is the impact goal, and to look at that and not compare a nonprofit return on community activity that's charitable and supported through grants against a technology company that's scalable and looking for venture rate returns.
Welcome to the Faith Driven Investor Podcast. If you're a fund manager, investor, or financial advisor driven by your faith or want to be driven by your faith, then you're in the right place. The best way to stay connected in the Faith Driven Investor community is to sign up for our newsletter at faithdriveninvestor.org. This podcast doesn't exist without you, our community. One of the things we've heard the community ask us for is help in finding great deals to invest in. And so we've launched Marketplace. It's a new platform of funds and direct deals. Everything from private equity and real estate funds to ETFs. From philanthropic to market rate deals spanning the U.S. and emerging markets. Check it out at faithdriveninvestor.org/marketplace. While you're there, please send us any thoughts you have about how this podcast might better serve you or any questions you have about being a faith-driven investor.
All opinions expressed on this podcast, including the team and guests, are solely their opinions. Host and guest may maintain positions in the companies and securities discussed. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as specific investment advice for any individual or organization.
Welcome back live to the Faith Driven Investor Podcast. I'm here with my great friend and partner at Sovereigns Capital, Luke Rausch. Luke, welcome.
Good afternoon.
It's good to see you, brother. We are doing this on both audio and video. We've got Bryce Butler in the house who was sharing with us right before we went live about what it looks like for him to have four daughters who are learning about faith-driven entrepreneurship and doing that out on a farm and some really neat e-commerce businesses. And we're going to put some links up here in the show notes. But we wanted to go ahead and talk with Bryce about what he uniquely does and some of the giftings he has and some of the experiences he has with Access Ventures. This is, of course, a podcast for an audience of people that are getting really intentional about stewarding their investment capital for the glory of God. And as we do that, we like to have stories. Luke and I like to get out and interview people that are being faithful and being innovative with the way that they're deploying capital in a way that they are loving on their communities and looking for investment returns. And Bryce has done just that, and he's done it for a long time. We oftentimes think about faith-driven investing and being in three buckets with the funds we look at. We think about funds that have existed with some level of spiritual integration in them. We think about funds that are starting up, and there's a great new group of men and women that feel called by God that have operating or investment experience that are launching new funds. And then also, there's a fair number of funds that are being retrofitted, funds that have been run by Christ followers and have had great success and are getting more and more intentional about how they love on their portfolio companies by bringing in things like chaplaincy and faith-driven employee resource groups, et cetera. Bryce is very squarely in that first camp. He's been very serious about his faith and investing for a long time. And one of the people that we look to in talking at the conferences that we're involved in. And so we're grateful that he'd spend time with us today, sharing with us what God has done through his life and through Access Ventures, what he does, why he does it, where he does it. You'll get a sense that place is really important to him. So Bryce, super glad to have you on the show. Thanks for joining.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
We'd love to open by hearing how our guests have their stories, what your origin story is, who you are, where do you come from. So tell us a bit about who you are and how you got here and how God and in your faith has led you to Access Ventures.
So my journey's a little circuitous. I'm the son of an Army officer. My dad actually this summer retired after 45 years of federal service, 23 with the Army, 16 or so with the U.S. Attorney's Office, and recently as a judge. So I moved around a lot. Actually, when I was growing up, I moved 8 times in 12 years. And so lived all over the place, lived 6 of my years overseas. And really, the military is a big part of my life. My great-great-great-grandfather was a sergeant in the Union Cavalry. And so ever since, as far back as I can track, there have been members of the military in my family. So it was one of those things where that's what I did. So when I graduated from college, I got an undergraduate degree in economics. I went into the Army. That's what paid for my school. And so the timing was like 2003. So the ground war started in April of 2003 in Iraq, and I was commissioned in May of 2003. as an armor officer. So I was on tanks. And I actually found myself being deployed to Korea. And so I spent 2 years on the DMZ in Korea before being reassigned to Fort Knox in Kentucky. And so that's what brought me here. So I actually live in Louisville, Kentucky. I've been here for about 15 years now. It's the longest I've lived anywhere. But I married a Kentuckian. I am deeply planted here. I actually inevitably got out of the military after 4 years on active duty and went to seminary. Felt a calling from the Lord to step into ministry. Didn't know what that was. Didn't really know if it was pastoral ministry, international missions, but really had a heart for just learning more and applying my faith more deeply. And so I went to seminary, but I wanted to work in a church while I was doing that to actually put that into practice. And so I found myself at a church plant, and this was 2007, that was really on a pretty steep cliff trajectory of growth. It went from 400 to 3,000 in my time there. Wow. In about 2 years, one campus to four. It's a church called Sojourn Community Church in Louisville, Kentucky. And I just, honestly, it was more, I was in the right place at the right time. The Lord used the gifts of strategy and logistics and operations that I had, but I became the executive pastor for about 5 years. And kind of in that process, learned a lot about church, church dynamics, church growth. And that brought me into kind of like, okay, Lord, I'm here at seminary. I enjoy preaching. I like teaching, but it's not, it doesn't drive me like a lot of the students that I see around me. I really get jazzed by working on these complex problems of organizational dynamics and leadership. I started working with the Entrepreneurship Initiative at Redeemer, got involved in their effort as a judge, spoke at a couple of their conferences, and just really got turned on to business for the common good. This was probably 2010 or so. And just really, it activated a lot of just my own gifting and desire. And it was then that I was like, I really feel like the Lord is leading me back to the marketplace. So I finished up my master's. I do have a master's in theology. And then I ended up leaving the pastoral ministry and working at a family office. And so worked with a family that was doing pretty innovative microfinance internationally, also investing in India and East Africa, and also their foundation. And kind of through that work, learned a ton, and kind of over the course of 4 years, kind of took those learnings and built what has become Access Ventures.
So tell us about Access Ventures. Tell us about what it uniquely does.
So Access Ventures is, you know, so technically it's a 501c3, it's a private operating foundation. So we're not like, when you hear the word foundation, a lot of times people immediately jump to grant writer, that, you know, just this endowed capital that is investing its resources to maximize financial return and then turning around and writing grants to organizations that align with their charitable purpose. We don't do that. We are an operating private foundation. So we actually kind of are a hybrid. We function much more like a public charity. We run programs. We're strategically looking at things like program-related investments, things that are aligned with our mission. So we don't write grants. We do activities as a charitable entity, but we also are endowed. So over the course of the last 7 years, I went from kind of this idea on the back of a napkin to what is now a fully endowed private operating foundation with about $50 million. And then what we do is we look to take all of those resources. So we talk about this idea of a one pocket mindset. And so we really have been, since the beginning, saying like, it's not the charitable dollars that should be achieving our values and purpose, but how can we align all of these investment dollars across a multi-asset strategy, whether it's real estate, whether it's private equity, venture, how can we take these tools, i.e. capital tools, resources, and identify fund managers, identify entrepreneurs, identify real estate opportunities, identify partnerships that are in line with our mission and that get us across that board a blended strategy, a blended portfolio, a blended return. And so we do charitable work. We do below market lending. We do non-concessionary direct investments. We have a blockchain strategy. We have a lot of other asset classes as well. So we look to take that entire portfolio and invest it in line with our purpose. And it's a lot of fun.
So that's really interesting. I love this idea. And I hope that we're going to be able to unpack this a lot more during our time together of this one pocket mindset. And I think that many of us can kind of understand it intellectually at one level, which is that we have bifurcated our giving from our investments, and maybe there's an opportunity to bring them both together. But that's hard work. And even though I obviously, or maybe not so obviously, but I obviously believe in that, just understanding how to do that is something I really want to understand more. And so tell me if I'm getting this right. Traditionally, Christians have thought of I want to make as much money as I possibly can over here in my left pocket. And then to the degree that I understand the biblical message of generosity, I want to give away as much as I possibly can over here with my right hand or in my right pocket. And you're suggesting that the very process of investing capital might accomplish the same missions goals that we had over there on the giving side. And so we need to be thinking about stewarding that capital in the same way. And yet it goes backwards too, which is that sometimes when we might otherwise think about investing, maybe we should be giving. So how do you think of it? So you stored a large sum of capital. How do you go ahead and say, gosh, I need to have a certain return on this? What's a framework you use to be able to process all of this? Is it just the impact?
Yeah. How do you create buckets? How do you decide kind of what goes in what bucket?
Well, I think you have to start by asking yourself a lot of questions. Like, what is the purpose of capital? What is the purpose of this capital? What do I need as a return? I think we need to be unapologetic about what we're trying to accomplish. And so if it is outsized returns or market returns, that's fine. Put it on the table. And let's talk about that and then say to what you were saying, Henry, I think the old adage of like make all you can, save all you can, give all you can. I do think there is a notion like make all you can so that you can give all you can. So we still need to do charitable work. We still need to do philanthropic activities. We need to support local churches, ministries that are sharing the gospel in places that are unreached. But in the course of making all you can, how do we align our values and who we are as people and our understanding of God and his universe and our responsibility in that universe? How do we align that with the making? Because I do believe that there are unbelievable fund managers, there's Sovereigns Capital and others that are intentionally trying to align various return profiles with kingdom or impact orientation. And so as you think about your own personal net worth or your own organizational purpose, make all you can, but in the making, the one pocket mindset is thinking through, it's really fundamentally, do you believe that money is a tool? It's a resource, right? And so how do we deploy resources, right? When you're building a house, you don't use a screwdriver where you should use a hammer. And so you fundamentally do have to ask your question, what is the purpose? What is the purpose of this capital? Do I need this to be non-concessionary? Okay, great. In the pursuit of a manager or an entrepreneur that's going to help me achieve that financial outcome, is there a way that I can work to align that with someone also pursuing a business model or intentionally leading their company in a way that honors the Lord? And so I think, your point on chaplaincy or the way we lead our companies, the way we think about resources and the stewardship of those resources or time off, or when you start to unpack what it means to really understand the dignity of the person and how that's manifest in our companies and how we care for people, it gets really exciting. And then you get to work with these entrepreneurs, these fund managers that are really trying to think creatively about things. The tent making, right? T1 through T4. I think sometimes people look at like the ones that are the business models in unreached people groups that aren't financially sustainable as lesser businesses. I like to put it up and say, well, if that was their intention, it's not necessarily bad. There are places where we should go into those countries and the business model may just be sustainable, i.e. we're covering our costs. But it's allowing that missionary to be in a place that they otherwise wouldn't be. If we're achieving our intended goal, our intended outcome with the financial return, and we're able to bring about human flourishing, the Imago Dei, that's a beautiful thing. If the goal is outsized returns and also to invest in kingdom-oriented entrepreneurs, great, let's do that. But I think what we've got to do is start to look at what was the financial goal, what is the impact goal, and to look at that and not compare a nonprofit return on community activity that's charitable and supported through grants against a technology company that's scalable and looking for venture rate returns. So
I think that's good. And, I always love examples. When you talk about access being inclusive and creative and resilient, we recently had Jewel Brooks on the show and she talked a little bit about less of a pipeline problem, more of an access problem. How have you kind of seen that playing out within Access and the mission that you serve? And then maybe just elucidate some of what you were pointing to there, Bryce, with a couple of examples of how you've seen that play.
Yeah, Jewel's great. And it is an access problem. So, our name, Access Ventures, I think at the end of the day, as Christians, I'm not surprised by inequality, right? Jesus says the poor will always be among you. So the issues of inequality that exist aren't surprising because they're products of the fall. It's not as God intended. It's not as it was to be. And so in our role as his created image bearers, like what does it look like to participate in rolling back, right? To roll back these injustices. And so I think the notion of an access issue, it's true. There are things in our world that are unjust. And so I think as Christians, what does it look like to right the wrongs? And so I think for entrepreneurs of color specifically, they have an access issue. Like less than 2% of venture capital goes to founders of color. When you have white families in America that average over $100,000 in net worth and the average black family has $7,600 in net worth, when you talk about who has access to financing, that's an access issue, right? There's a capital. I, as a white man in America, I can go to my family and friend network, and more often than not, that's the first place an entrepreneur goes. And I'm not going to have as hard of a time finding capital to support my business. Whereas a black founder, they may have great social networks. Oftentimes, communities of color have unbelievable networks. But when those networks, because of wealth inequality that has existed for centuries, when that network doesn't have financial capacity, it makes it very, very difficult. And you look at issues of redlining around housing and the modern day redlining around business financing and access to just debt through traditional means, it is an access issue. So I think as Christians, we've got to look at solutions, i.e. companies that are solving for problems, i.e. one of our portfolio companies is a company called Solo Funds. So Solo Funds is a technology company, venture backable, just closed a Series A, based out of LA, and they're a marketplace as an alternative to payday lending. So by nature, the product itself is helping to solve for a community issue, which is the crazy payday lending system that we have in America, where people are paying 200-300% to access a loan that you used to get at a community bank on a signatory, right? You could get a signature loan for less than $1,000. You can't do that anymore. And so what happens is low-income people are pushed to these check into cash places, and it's just this vicious cycle. And so Solo is creating a marketplace where the borrower can actually set the terms on the loan, and then the lender, individual, peer-to-peer, can go on and accept that term in 2 weeks. So it's a great win-win. And so that product itself is doing an amazing thing in solving for some of the injustice that exists. But then on the capital side, we've got to say there is an access issue related to capital. So Jewel, for example, with Colab is looking at how do we get more money into the hands of Black founders, female founders, because historically they haven't had the same opportunities with regular mom and pop businesses, not your impact-oriented one like a Solo Funds, but a great company where there's a decision bias because most of the people on the investment committee look like me or look like you and don't understand perhaps the business model that they're bringing forward, or the type of capital they need to scale is different than traditional venture. So I think, you know, it's our responsibility then to reimagine what it looks like for the capital itself to meet the needs and to help solve for some of that injustice as well. We need both and new models, new businesses.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And, you know, as you think about the capital that you guys are in charge of shepherding, $50 million is a lot of money, but the access problem is certainly a lot bigger than what's going to be solved by $50 million. How do you think about catalyzing others to step into that gap, particularly in, you know, secondary market cities, not the big three or four or five that capture 80% of the, you know, private equity dollar?
Yeah, so this kind of hits a little bit at Louisville, Kentucky. So Louisville is one of those cities. And I think what we're trying to do, we created a new regional fund called Render Capital that sits under Access Ventures. And really, it's a strategy. It's not a fund. Even though it's about $15 million, we have portions of it that are managed traditionally like a traditional venture fund because that's what some entrepreneurs need. But actually trying to create the capital structure in a way that meets the needs of the entrepreneurs. And so we actually have a portion that's focused on partnering with banks, because what we found in our market is banks aren't lending. And, you know, especially with what's happened this year with COVID and what's just happened over the last 10 years since the housing crunch of 2008. So what we've seen is banks have retracted from startups. And so if you don't have collateral, don't have a personal guarantee, good luck getting access to capital from a bank, even though they'll tell you all day long, yeah, we'll work with you. And so what we're trying to do is actually create guarantee pools. So we have a guarantee pool that we created to try to attract local banks where you do the underwriting, you help them build credit, you build this relationship with the traditional bank, and we'll guarantee that loan. Because we believe that the entrepreneur is good for it. You know, it's really an access issue. It's a capital access issue. So can we put our money at risk and help support that entrepreneur by parking it at that bank and working through the bank to lend to that entrepreneur. So we have that going, looking at alternatives to equity, profit sharing, or revenue-based financing, which are some new kind of creative models on how to deploy capital. But then also, because it's a strategy, looking at a market like Louisville, we have to acknowledge we've got to be, on some levels, a market builder. So I've got to look at below market lending. I've got to look at even some philanthropic work through universities to spur innovation for future next gen entrepreneurs. And so what we've done is we've built actually a pretty robust blended strategy that has philanthropic work, traditional equity, alternatives to equity, guarantees with banks, Main Street lending. Because the other thing we found too, in a place like Louisville, as you do work literally in a grassroots community like that, Main Street supports high growth tech enabled companies, right? Talk to any high growth company. We were just talking about it before we jumped on the podcast, Austin, Denver. These entrepreneurs are attracted to places where there's a thriving cultural scene. They want local food. They want something to do with the outdoors. They want their people, their talent, to have a place to go and be excited outside of work. And so if we only solve for the capital access issue of this high growth tech enabled company, i.e. venture, and we ignore the issue going on in Main Street, how are we going to create an environment where that tech-enabled entrepreneur sees this as an opportunity to grow and thrive? If the local coffee shop, the local ice cream store, the local brewery, whatever, is struggling to find capital, nobody wants to go where there's, you know, tons of fast food chain restaurants, right? So we need all of that. And so we've got to get really creative around the structure of capital.
So when you talk about the structure of capital and you talk about the different sources and different purposes, you alluded to something there that I want to look at a little bit more, which is that you find out that as compelling as some of these opportunities for impact investing are, or more market return investing might be, there's this third area, which is grant capital. That's also part of the battery or the arrows that you have in your quiver to address a particular societal need. So tell us about, you know, we're faith-driven investing. A lot of people think, well, gosh, you know, we're going to be focused on impact investing. We're going to be focused on market return investing. And yet what makes us unique in this podcast is that we're all Christ followers. We're trying to understand how God might have us allocate his capital. And that absolutely needs to include grant capital. So if you've got a large sum of money, you may be called to writing a large check where you don't get any return back because of the ultimate return in addressing the particular issue you feel called to. So how did you do that in this instance? Because you talked about a number of really compelling investment opportunities, and yet at the end of the day, you said, it's probably not enough. We also need to invest in the next generation. How do you decide which programs to support? How do you decide how much to put in that program versus what you would otherwise put in the investment pocket?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think some of it's driven by the strategy. Some of it's driven by what you're trying to accomplish. So for us, I'll give you an example. I was talking with some folks recently about opportunity zones. So we're part of an opportunity zone fund. We help incubate one called Blueprint Local that is now in Texas and Maryland and across the Southeast. And it was kind of incubated off of some of the real estate strategy we've deployed in Louisville. But what I was sharing with this group was they were really interested and attracted to this idea of the Opportunity Zone Fund, right? This equity investment predominantly in real estate in underinvested communities. And like, this is a great financial opportunity. And it is. It is a great way to grow wealth. But the real intended purpose of the Opportunity Zones is to reinvest and to build wealth, not just for the investors, but also for the community. And so what I was trying to help them see, and which a light bulb finally went off with them, I said, what are you doing philanthropically? I said, because if you look at the communities in which you're deploying your Opportunity Zone Fund, they're all below market neighborhoods. They're all low income neighborhoods. By definition, they are an opportunity zone. And so as you look at your donor advised fund, as you look at your own foundation, as you look at your own charity, who in that community is already doing good work that would support the work that you're doing on the real estate side? You know, think about like the businesses, right? The Opportunity Zone Fund doesn't allow for debt financing, but every single business that you want to go into that brick and mortar shop is going to need tenant improvement financing. Well, if the banks aren't lending, what are you going to do? So can you create some sort of debt vehicle that supports businesses that might be willing to establish their presence in that community? Who's doing early childhood education? What churches are in that area? What other like local ministries are there that are supporting the needs of those neighbors, so that as you're doing the work in the opportunity zone. You're working philanthropically or in other creative ways to support that work. But ultimately, the community wins, because that's the goal. The goal is to build wealth for you, but also to build the wealth of that community and the flourishing of that area. And so leveraging that tool, but then wrapping around it some other ways that you can bring about some shalom that doesn't exist or hasn't existed there for a while. So, you know, an example of a way that we've, you know, tried to think about it on the investing side, the render capital side, we're just looking at it and saying, okay, we're trying to solve for this problem. The issue is access to capital, regional entrepreneurship. And in order for us to do that, it has to be a longer vision. And so how do we create opportunities for the entrepreneurs that exist today? But if we want a thriving economy, a thriving community, how are we setting the stage for next gen? And so it got us kind of focused earlier and looking at high schools and universities and saying, okay, for us to be successful 5 years from now, 10 years from now, we've got to be thinking about that. And that's not something we're going to get a financial return from. So we kind of start to build back into kind of how much capital, what type of capital, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So, you know, as you're talking about ecosystem, which really resonates with me, and it mirrors some of what we've seen in markets where we've invested, it's not just sort of one thing that needs to get done. It's actually a whole ecosystem of things that need to get done. Love to understand just how you think about sequencing. When you were first starting Access, how did you think about what do you do first? You've been really active in real estate. You've done some other things that are exotic, like Bitcoin. How did you?
Well, I think I would like to at least start by saying we kind of made up a lot of it as we were going along. I mean, to be frank, like when I started Access Ventures, it was a sidecar project. I was working in a family office. I was working in a manufacturing company. I kind of had this idea to take some of the lessons learned that we were doing in India and East Africa and say, look, there's some problems here. Could we just get creative around the financial structure? And so I built this real estate holding company, basically borrowed patient debt from a couple of high net worth individuals that caught the vision and started putting it to work, worked with some homeless shelters to create jobs in the renovation of those projects. And so it just started working. And then like a year later, we had to ask ourselves the question, like, okay, what is this? And that's when it started to become a thing. But even as it became a thing, we realized that much like ecosystem building, Luke, the real thing is these problems and these solutions, they're so connected. Housing is connected to capital, is connected to jobs, is connected to transportation. I mean, so when we started working on housing, we realized very, very quickly, I can give somebody a better home, a more stable home, but if they don't have a job, if they don't have any education, you know, so we found ourselves in other areas. So we started doing microlending because the banks weren't lending. And so we just kind of, as problems emerged, we tried to think creatively about how to solve for that. And then over time, as the capital grew, we were able to kind of build more of a cohesive strategy. But, you know, it's been the last 6 years journey to kind of learn some of those hard lessons and try to figure it out.
Yeah. Well, the idea of kind of making it up as you go along, or at least kind of doing the right next thing, is certainly not unfamiliar territory for us. So that resonates. And, you know, just the idea of not having to necessarily have a grand master plan on day one of how the next 10 years are going to roll, but you've got a vision and a calling and a mission that God put on your heart to sort of do one thing. And then as you do that one thing, then it leads to others. So that resonates with me.
As you've proceeded, as you've done this though, and done the right next thing, what are some lessons you've learned along the way? And I know enough about you and your story and what Access Ventures has done and how God has worked through that to know that it's been really successful and you serve as such a great model for people to be intentional about their local communities. But you probably have learned some lessons along the way. Like for instance, in the early days of Sovereigns Capital, Luke and I learned that you really actually should have a cap for every convertible debt loan that you send out, right? And so we won't make that mistake twice. But what are some of the things you've learned as you've gotten out there and kind of just rolled up your sleeves?
Yeah, I think so. We used to be heavily invested in real estate. We're not so much anymore. So that's one of the things that we learned rather quickly. One, it's like, what are you good at? What are you not good at? And I think we were successful in what we set out to accomplish. Financially, we got better returns than we had anticipated. I'm very proud of the work that we did, but we're not a real estate development company. You know, we worked with a general contract, we worked with different partners. But a couple of years ago, we looked around and said, where is this going? And are we uniquely gifted in order to do this at scale? Or are there better ways for us to apply our team and our talents to address some of these community issues? And what are those underlying issues? And so as much as we did a lot of real estate early on, we actually don't do that as much anymore. We, you know, that's what Genesis to the Opportunity Zone Fund and different things. So those are some lessons. I think another one is being flexible, especially this year with COVID. One of the things, like one of the passages I love is like, we plan, but God determines our steps, right? Proverbs 16, 9. And so I think there's an important, like we do need to plan, but God determines. So we need to hold these with open hands. But like, I didn't plan any, I mean, I had plans for 2020, but the things that I planned haven't manifested in the way that I thought they would. And so how are we flexible? How are we looking at the impacts of the market and saying, okay, what are we not doing now? Because it just doesn't make any sense. And instead of being dogmatic and pressing forward something that's just not going to work, we've got to be flexible and adjust in order to meet the needs of our community. Ultimately, what's the mission? What are our values? And the path might be different and circuitous, but ultimately, if those are the things at our forefront, then I think then we can get pretty creative. So I've learned a lot. I think evaluation is an interesting thing. You know, we've talked about this before, Henry and Luke and I, and just around, I think defining at the outset what you're trying to do and then how you're measuring towards that. Because I think in this exciting world of impact and faith-driven investing and faith-driven entrepreneurship, it gets pretty sexy, but it also gets pretty squishy. Mm-hmm. And so we've got to get real about what we mean by that.
Give us an example. What does that look like? As you look to measure your success and understand that indeed we're making the progress that we think we're capable of or that needs to happen, what does success look like for you?
Yeah, I think it's having a conversation at the beginning so that it's not assumed. And, you know, what does faith-driven investing mean for you? And I think, because the unfortunate thing is if we don't have these conversations, what happens is sometimes this can become unbelievably tribal. And so I have a conversation with my faith tribe, my denominational tribe, about what kingdom impact means. And so that might be chaplaincy, that might be conversions or church attendance or, you know, dollars donated to homeless shelters or whatever it might be. But how do we expand that and make it more of an accessible conversation for Christians of all stripes to come to it and say, well, here's my faith, here's my values, here's how I think about shalom, human flourishing, imago Dei, people, planet, profit, and how that's reflected. And I think what happens is you have a more full conversation. You help an entrepreneur understand, maybe expand their understanding around like what it means to be a gospel-centered entrepreneur, a faith-driven entrepreneur, because they're thinking as well, I need chaplains. Well, it's great. That's a great first step. But like, how are you paying your people? How much time off are you giving? Are you allowing for them? Do you have adoption services to help support families? Do you have, I think as we start to imagine what this could be, it gets really, really exciting. Childcare on site, services for women to be able to work and to grow in their profession, but not have to sacrifice their profession for family as they start to make those choices. So like, what does that mean for you? And then once you define that as the entrepreneur, having those honest conversations with your aligned investors to make sure, because I think what happens sometimes where I've seen it go kind of squishy is one, it's not defined. And on the other side, it might be defined, but there wasn't a conversation. And so there was an expectation that was unmet. And so the investor might get frustrated because like, I thought you were going to do this, or why aren't you doing this? This is what it means to be kingdom oriented. And I think where those conversations can be thoughtful, consciously determined, collectively understood, I think we're going to see a lot more, I think, exciting future for both the entrepreneurs and the investors.
Yeah, the idea of the conversation upfront and being clear about how do we want to think about impact. Otherwise, it can kind of become whatever we want it to be over time. And we've seen, you know, investments that started out being for-profit investments at market that become concessionary investments, you know.
It could be on the financial return. Yeah, it could be like on just the definition of what it means to be Christian, right? So I think because even in our modern world, it's like a lot of people culturally are Christian. What does that look like? And so I defining that and ultimately, what does that mean for you? What does that mean for me? Are we aligned?
Yeah.
How can we have that as a conversation?
That you and I have had, I think in the past is this idea of how do we invite people in, you know, and you and I and Robert Kim had this conversation at some point about how do we engage within even SOCAP, which is a decidedly secular environment. And yet there are some common ground points that we can kind of reach with people. And so this idea of having a conversation up front and also being open-minded about what impact is. It's not one size fits all, it's one size fits one. Maybe just one thing I'd love for you to share for 2 minutes and then Henry's going to wrap us is if you could just maybe just offer an encouragement to the other Bryce Butlers who are out there who are thinking about really wanting to have an effect and be used by God to affect change in their city, but are unsure kind of How do they get going? How would you encourage them to kind of lean in and start down this road that God's taken you on over the last 8 or 10 years?
It's a great question. A verse that I'm reminded of often is 1 Thessalonians 4, that the goal of the Christian life is to lead a quiet life. And I think sometimes in scripture, God is this interesting, awesome, awesome thing. You know, so he has passages in the Bible about ambition, right? And he has passages in there about patience and rest and waiting on the Lord. And on some levels you could think, well, those are, you know, there's a paradox there. But I think what I love about like 1 Thessalonians 4 is like, let's pursue, again, much like the planning and God determining our steps. I'm always asking myself, what's the difference between complacency and contentment? And am I being complacent? The prayer that I have oftentimes is, am I being complacent, i.e. burying my talents, not doing the things that I should be doing as a follower of Jesus? Or am I truly just living into like resting, you know, be still and know that I am God? What does that look like to be still? And so I think as people are working in local communities, they're going to have to wrestle in that tension. And because it's hard work, it does require persistence. And so where I've seen people go awry oftentimes is they press into these ambitious goals and they forget to rest, or they get a little complacent because they're comfortable in the work that they're doing and they don't take some of the opportunities that they might. So what does it look like to live in that tension? A saying that I love is like, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? I think some people hear my story and it becomes overwhelming. Because I hear it sometimes like, oh my gosh, I don't have $50 million, so I can't go do that. And what I would say is like, what small incremental step can you take? You know, I started with $500,000. It didn't have to be that. It could have been far less. It could have been one home and just partnerships. And so what is a very small step that someone can take in investing in a strategic fund manager that cares deeply about the kingdom, adjusting their allocations, looking for real estate investments that have some value alignment, aligning their charitable dollars with something that's different than just traditional philanthropy. So I think, what are some of those small steps instead of getting overwhelmed by the enormity of it?
That's very good. And then you also touched on some of the things I wanted to ask in our final question. We like to finish off every one of the podcasts that we do across Faith Driven Entrepreneur, Faith Driven Investor by asking our guest what they are hearing from God through his word. And then also something we can pray for you about. Our hope is that this will be a podcast that'll be an inspiration and encouragement to many, and it'll be passed along and shared with other people that want to be intentional about loving people in their local communities, and that people will listen to this and be able to lift up a prayer for you and Access Ventures and what you're doing. But tell us what you're hearing from God in his word. And yes, of course, let us know how to pray for you.
Well, I think I hit on it a little bit, but just this notion of rest. I mean, 2020 has been this crazy year. Mm-hmm. And I would say 80% of the plans that I had, the things I'm doing are not the things that I had planned to do this year. I am unbelievably excited about the future. I'm resolute on the work that we're doing and love it. But I think for me, the complacency and contentment, resting, trusting in the Lord, patience, balancing that though with this push for doing as much as I can. And so I want to be faithful. So the prayer is kind of tied to some of my own wrestling with 1 Thessalonians 4 and this notion of Proverbs and planning and God's direction is, I don't want to be so content in what I'm doing that I miss out on something that the Lord might have for me. So I do covet prayers related to just wisdom for myself and for the work that we're doing, that we are pressing forward into the things that we should be pressing forward into. We didn't talk about it much, but I have 4 daughters, married 14 years and 4 kids, and they're getting into that age of just curiosity and maturity, and that I would lead them well and give them good direction as they venture out into this crazy world.
And for your 2 budding entrepreneurs.
That's right.
Good Bites Bakery into divinity and beyond.
That's right.
Outstanding. Well, Bryce, thank you very much for your friendship and encouragement and partnership in the movement. And accessventures.org is a great website that goes through what you are doing and what God is doing through you. And may the Lord bless you and everything that's going on in Louisville and beyond.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much for joining us on today's show. We're very, very grateful for the opportunity to serve the larger faith-driven investor community. Hey, the best way for you to stay connected is to sign up for our monthly newsletter at faithdriveninvestor.org. And while you're there, we of course want to hear from you. We derive great joy from interacting with many of you, and it's been very rewarding to see people join the discussion now from all around the world. But it's also very important to us that you feel like this is your show, and that you'll help make it something that best equips you on your journey, one that you're proud of, and one that you'll share with others. This podcast, it wouldn't be possible without the help from many of our friends. Executive producer, Justin Foreman. Program director, Johnny Wills. Music by Carl Kegwell. You can see and hear more of his work at summerdregs.com. And audio and editing by Richard Barley of Cornerstone Church in San Francisco.